This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, my friends, when you see the boys and girls in blue today, tip your hat. Tip your hat to the boys and girls. And what I mean by that is the Michigan State Police marking their 100th anniversary today. The Michigan State, well, you might want to tip your hat, you know, when the bubble's not going. I didn't say I had to go get a ticket to say hi to them, but, you know, say hi to the Michigan State Police today. And they've been out there protecting and defending you for 100 years. So there's a tip my hat for a job well done. Hey, if you didn't hear this, Venezuela, the great socialist utopian experiment coming apart at the seams currently. And in fact, Ivy handed me this a moment ago. Apparently, that utopian society has claimed the General Motors plant there. GM immediately halting all operations in Venezuela after its plant was seized. Well, of course they're halting operations. They have no operation if the plant has been seized. Illegal judicial seizure of its assets is the way General Motors is describing it. The automaker said the seizure showed a total disregard for its legal rights. It said that authorities had removed assets, including cars, vehicles from company facilities. General Motors strongly rejecting the arbitrary measures taken by the authorities and the authoritarian regime and will vigorously take all legal actions within and outside of Venezuela to defend its rights. You have no rights, by the way. It's a Marxist utopian society. GM's been operating there for 70 years. Didn't you, Ivy, didn't you study international relations? Isn't that what your degree is in?
Yes, it is.
So you've been well-versed in the world of Marxism and communism. How often does it succeed?
Never.
That's right. Tell her what she's won, Johnny, behind door number three. That never works. That's right. Venezuela, what a mess.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not much to say other than there's complete hysteria. Their people are fleeing, you know.
It's going to be a failed nation here shortly. The government is failing. The government is falling. The hospitals are empty. The grocery stores are empty. The inflation is, you know, thousands of percentage points.
You wouldn't have wanted to break your leg there.
No, I would not have wanted to break my leg in Venezuela. I'd probably still be there. They'd find me in a few years. Meanwhile, the king of cable news gone. 15 years as the king, Bill O'Reilly gets the boot. By far the biggest star on cable news. The shocking and sudden exit comes amid this flurry, bunch of allegations that he harassed, sexual harassment situations. Apparently the network paid out something like $13 million to five women over the last many years. Now, it doesn't say for what, whether there were comments, didn't say he was getting handsy. Don't know, really. We don't really have any idea what he did or didn't do.
No. I mean, if you watch some of O'Reilly's early videos, and he just goes on some really serious rants. And I don't, you know, I've never met him. I don't know him, but he doesn't seem to be the nicest person to be around on occasion. So who knows?
I saw the video, actually, you showed it to me, of him going berserk because his prompter wasn't working and they were in a break trying to record something. And he started F-bombing all over the studio, which, by the way, is a no-no in broadcast. You don't start F-bombing in the studio because you never know if somebody's live. Not that it's being taped. You can live with that and laugh about it or be embarrassed by it. But there's always that possibility that somewhere, somehow, because you're in a studio, it goes live to the world. Well, you can't have that.
No, that'd be a big mistake.
Yeah. You know, if you drop an F-bomb, my understanding, on a radio station like this one, it's $25,000.
Per station.
So in my particular case, it would be financially devastating because of the 20 stations we have, they'd all get 25 grand. You know, it'd be a party at the FCC with my checkbook or something, right? And I'd be destroyed. But anyhow, so he's gone. O'Reilly's gone. Sexual harassment, at least that's what they say. advertisers were fleeing the program. But what's weird about it is this. Since this whole thing started to churn at the beginning of the month here in April, O'Reilly's ratings have gone even higher. Now, he has dominated cable news for 15 years, but his ratings were increasing while the advertisers were fleeing. O'Reilly himself fled to Italy on vacation, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned a moment ago, photographed with the Pope. Even the Pope couldn't help him. The Pope wasn't good at, you know, the amazing fall from grace was not to be stopped. Fox News, apparently starting Monday, you'll have Tucker Carlson. You like Tucker.
I do. You know, you. I think that you were a little bit hesitant at first.
I didn't used to like him. I'll tell you, I'm not hesitant. I didn't like the guy.
Yeah, and he, I think he has an interesting take on it. I mean, he does have a lot of liberals on. Sometimes I wonder how in the world they get these people because...
Because you know you're going to get filleted.
Oh, yeah.
And he does. He filleted that little giggle.
But he always
giggle.
Says that, you know, that funny chuckle, yeah, and the big smile. So, and I think that he's
When they
polite,
say something completely indefensible and absurd, and he just giggles at him. He's like, you are so dumb.
But I really don't understand what Fox News is thinking. I mean, so you had, you know, Megyn Kelly gone, Greta's gone. Now you have...
Of course, Ailes, the big dog left, yeah. 9 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Ailes got the boot because of sexual harassment allegations that began last year, which leaves a lot of folks available. Think about this. If Glenn Beck, who has had a relationship with Bill O'Reilly for years, and Bill has him on his program even mm-hmm. recently from time to time,
yep.
Glenn Beck has a network. It's called The Blaze. It's a conservative network. Now, Glenn Beck in recent years has kind of gone into weird world yeah. Near as I can figure, which whatever, and a total anti-Trump guy there mm-hmm. for a long period of time. And so now, but he has this opportunity. He could bring Bill O'Reilly to his network, potentially. Bill O'Reilly's 67. I don't think we've heard the last of Bill O'Reilly. You can bring Monica Crowley over.
Yeah.
Monica Crowley, who, you know, says she was attacked when she was...
Well, she was part of the Trump administration. And
briefly,
then,
for like 5 minutes.
And then she was all out attacked on that plagiarism charge and all sorts of things. And so she... there's a booker that we work with who knows her very well and said, listen, there's an all-out war against conservatives, and Monica Crowley isn't the start and isn't the end.
And that clearly just, that was true, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, our booker was right. See, we have some inside information, inside baseball on that deal, and so Monica Crowley certainly wasn't the last. In fact, it was just part of the ongoing attack, and I suppose that to a much lesser degree, we'd be targeted here
mm-hmm.
because we have a certain number of stations and a certain bit of reach that we have put together here with the support of our listeners. At any rate, the all-out attack continues. Bill O'Reilly will be back. I am certain of it. And I think that you might find him on The Blaze. We'll see what happens with that going forward. But all it takes is an accusation. Doesn't take any proof, just an accusation. And
your life as you know it can be over.
Well, right. And CNN and MSNBC gleeful about it all. Just gleeful. Because they actually have a chance to come out from Bill O'Reilly's shadow now. This part of the program brought to you by our good friends at Northville Lumber. They sell more Trex decking and railing than anyone in the Midwest. To find out more, log on to northvillelumber.com. That's northvillelumber.com. We'll be right back.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge. Here is Steve Gruber.
April 20th, you go ahead and do that 420 math and enjoy the music. All right, it's 18 after on the Steve Gruber Show. Glad to have you along for the discussion. I want people in Shiawassee County to pay special attention to this next story, and everybody really, but how tall is the Mackinac Bridge? Do you have any idea?
I don't.
All right, the Mackinac Bridge is just over 550 feet tall, the main towers, all right, which means the bridge will be about 50 feet shorter than some wind turbines being proposed for Shiawassee County. Places like, what's in Shiawassee County? Durand, Morris, Perry, Owosso, Bancroft. Are those Shiawassee County communities? I believe so. A Virginia company called Apex Clean Energy wants to put up as many as 60 of the 600-foot-tall wind turbines, giant windmills. You know, the ones like Huron County has a site of 473. They call by 550 by the end of the year. You've got them in Ithaca and Alma and all over. I think they're a financial disaster. Maybe I'm wrong. But while we're talking about energy and government, let's bring Jason Hayes in, the Director of Environmental Policy for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Jason, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you here. You know, despite all of these efforts by the government to put out wind and solar and take your tax dollars and mine to infuse, to prop them up, frankly, they continue to fail. In fact, we just heard about another one. Could you share it with us, please?
Yeah, the story that was posted on our Michigan Capital Confidential is talking about Suniva, a plant that's located in Saginaw County and or was located in Saginaw County. It's been beneficiary of multiple millions of dollars in taxpayer handouts and subsidies, loan guarantees, that sort of thing. They came in promising, I believe it was 400 jobs for the area. They just closed down the plant and laid everybody off.
So here we are. Hold on. Here we are. So we've got a government that takes tax dollars to give incentives to create 400 jobs, allegedly 400 jobs that were created by your tax dollars and mine. So we could argue about how that, whether or not that's efficient. And then it doesn't even happen. And so we've squandered resources once again on these, dare I say, on 420 pipe dreams that go nowhere. Yep.
Right. And I mean, it's kind of a Solyndra all over again. And the thing that keeps going over in my head when I think about these things is that old saying, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, three times, four times, five times. You know, how many times do we need to be fooled before we figure out that this may not be the best way to invest?
Well, the problem is we're not being fooled. We're being strong-armed. The fact of the matter is the government takes our money. It's not like we give them permission. We're not being fooled. We're not investing. We're not buying into it. They take our money, and then they put it into these foolish programs because somebody promises them that they're going to get 400 jobs in their district, or it's going to bring so much tax money to Michigan, or it's going to do this or that or whatever else it's going to do. Most of these things or oftentimes never happen, and yet our money is still fleeced from us and squandered by politicians who are, for the most part, unaccountable.
Yeah, well, the reason they do it is they get a good headline when, you know, they're bringing in, the MEDC is talking about bringing in new jobs and look at all this sort of things. I mean, the article that Tom Gantert wrote, excellent article, was talking about the Federal Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. They had up on their website a big headline that, you know, the future's so bright you have to wear shades. but at the end of the day, I mean, that they closed down the plant. So, I mean, those workers who were employed, they, you know, they got themselves a job, or at least they thought they did.
Well, here's the
thing.
Maybe
their future isn't so bright.
You know, I'm no rocket scientist or a scientist in solar panels or wind, but I can tell you this, Jason. I know that places like Nevada and Wyoming have a lot more sun and wind than Michigan on a very consistent basis. There are places that are far more suitable. If you're going to pursue solar and wind energy, hey, that's great in conjunction with everything else. But Michigan really isn't the most conducive place for either one of those things.
Right. And I mean, I came from Arizona before I moved to Michigan. So, yeah, there was lots of solar there. But surprisingly enough, the industry still relied on subsidies in Arizona, where there is a great deal more sun, more reliable, more constant. I mean, you would think that Arizona, if anywhere you're going to put solar, you would put it in Arizona. And still, the industry needed the subsidies to keep it afloat.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. If you can't survive in the free, and the way it's supposed to work, at least the way it used to work, land-grant institutions like Michigan State University, for example, and other state universities would do research. They do scientific research and discover properties or things or create things, and then they would hand those discoveries off to private enterprise. But in this day and age, the government seems to hoard a lot of what goes on, and the government studies are conducted at taxpayer expense. funded at taxpayer expense, farmed out at taxpayer expense, and it never goes to private industry the way it used to work, in my estimation. Am I right or wrong about that?
Yeah, definitely. That's what's happening. And I mean, the way that I have always argued this is, if these industries could compete on a free market, level playing field, then I'd be all for it.
Exactly.
And for me, I don't care where we get our electricity, whether it's solar or nuclear or natural gas. It doesn't matter to me. But do it in a free market sense. Don't take money from me and, you know, force me to pay you to keep your business afloat and then tell me that you're, in quotes, competitive, because you're not.
It reminds me of a line from the movie Josie Wales that I can't share here this morning, but it makes me think of a couple of things, Jason. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, well, I mean, once again, I mean, compete in a free market. That's the one thing that I've always supported. And again, I don't care where I get my electricity so long as it's, you know, I have the option of saying yes or no.
That's
like
right.
You said, Steve, we're not given that option. They take our tax dollars, they invest for us, and we really don't have any say in it.
So. We have no play in it. And we know that in Ontario, electric prices going up by as much as 500% because of their wonderful government programs. Jason, great conversation from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. It's Jason Hayes, everybody. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, back in just a moment here.
California. Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
On the Steve Gruber Show. Thanks for dialing it up. Thanks for dialing it in. The Common Sense Hotline is 888-900-9966. Take a few calls here in a few minutes here on the program. But first, we're going to talk about sanctuary cities. Can you imagine when you were growing up, you have police in the various cities said, you know what, we're just not going to enforce those laws, whatever the laws may have been. You know, just we don't agree with those laws. We're not going to enforce them. We're just going to say, you know what, we'll do what we want. There's a term for that. It's called anarchy. And in America, we are supposed to be a nation of laws. And this whole nonsensical discussion of sanctuary cities is completely absurd and in conflict with who we are as a nation. Now, if you think that we should have sanctuary cities, then certainly talk to your member of Congress, get something put through, get it signed into law, and we're good to go. But until then, to have some notion that you would be able to tell local police officers that they are not to talk to or work with or help federal law enforcement agencies or members of law enforcement is absurd. My next guest, Dave Ray, FAIR's Communication Director, FAIR being the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Appreciate you taking the time to talk about this important topic.
It is extremely important. Of course, you probably saw the headlines here. The state capital of Michigan, Lansing, was declared a sanctuary city for a few days, and then it was rejected when people spoke up and said, are you out of your minds, basically? But this is going on all over the country. You know, we're just going to ignore the laws. How is that even possible?
Well, it's possible because the federal government for 8 years under Barack Obama allowed it to happen. I mean, it's very clear in the Immigration Nationality Act that adopting any kind of policies that prevent communication between federal and local cops or state and local cops and federal immigration officers, that's illegal. And obviously the federal government has a lot of tools that it could have used to coerce these cities into going along with federal law as they do in other instances.
Seems to me that the federal government has a lot of tools left over from the previous administration is what it seems to me, but carry on.
Yeah, I was talking about different types of tools, but I guess I agree with you on that one, too.
Who's that tool in that office? Yeah, I got it. Go on.
But, just in a nutshell, sanctuary policies endanger public safety. They encourage more illegal immigration, and they create a sense of lawlessness in the United States. We first learned how important it is to have free flow of communication between state and local cops and federal immigration enforcement right after 9/11, when they did the analysis of, you know, what actually went on, and these 19 individuals who were involved in the three attacks on this country.
Sure.
And they found that in several instances, state and local cops, who are really the eyes and ears of the nation, pulled two or three of these folks over on traffic violations. And had there been any questions asked, or had there been an immigration check done when they pulled these folks over, perhaps we might have uncovered the entire plot and saved 3,000 lives.
Well, let me jump in and say this, and I think it was Jeff Sessions here over the last couple of days, who said that Latin gangs like the Latin Kings and MS-13 are more dangerous in many ways than ISIS. Well, if that's the case, then why are we not trying to root out and figure out where they are, what they're up to? Then there's this whole boat of serial killings in New York State linked back to MS-13 of young American boys, teenagers, murdered by this gang for whatever reason. And so we know this is going on, and yet these cities and even the whole state of California and Hawaii, those two states are trying to become sanctuary states. How absurd. And you know, listen, at some point, I think that the president has the right and the obligation to federalize certain local law enforcement agents if that state or that county or that region refuses to follow the law.
You know, well, these sanctuary ordinances are so nonsensical. You know, here we have an example where a state and local police officer, and this is an actual case out of North Carolina, an example that a sheriff gave me. They not only endanger public safety, but they're not always in the best interest of illegal immigrants. Here's a good example. A highway patrolman pulls over a van that, you know, got a burnt out taillight or what have you, and it finds in the back of the van, you know, 15 women who don't speak a word of English and don't have any identification paper showing they're permitted to be in the United States. What is probably going on here is alien smuggling. What's probably going to happen with these women is that they're going to spend the rest of their lives in forced prostitution or slavery, and they're on their way to one of our major cities and where that's going to be conducted. Are the police actually doing those women a favor by turning a blind eye? I mean, you know,
that's the exact point.
The other thing is this, about sanctuary policies, it's not only the refusal to share information if police come upon a lead or something for immigration enforcement officers. It's actually refusing to honor what are called detainer requests. And this is really the most egregious aspect of sanctuary policies. Let's say, for example, somebody's a mass murderer in Michigan, and they get off after 20 years or so on. They're an illegal immigrant. Right before they're going to be released, ICE would contact the local jail or police department and say, please hold this person for 48 hours while we send somebody over. That's called a detainer.
Right.
While we send somebody over to pick them up, and we're going to get them out of the country.
And now they're refusing to do that.
They will not hold on to those people.
And that is outrageous.
They don't talk to federal immigration enforcement. That guy or that woman ends right back on the streets of Michigan.
Absolutely outrageous.
I mean, how does this make sense?
It makes no sense. It's absolutely outrageous. It's in violation of the law. It's contrary to any common sense or you know, doing the right thing, or even due diligence for that matter. You know, we heard of a case here not long ago where a judge snuck an illegal out the back door of the courthouse, an illegal charged with drunk driving. Can you imagine if an ordinary citizen got snuck out the side of the courthouse for drunk driving? People would go absolutely berserk. But because it was an illegal, somehow she felt that it was okay. If you get a drunk driving conviction in America, you're not even allowed to go to Canada. But here, we're protecting and shielding drunk drivers, some of them multiple drunk drivers, for a variety of bad reasons. Dave, I'll give you 20 seconds for the last word.
Sanctuary policies are bad public policy. Just a quick glance. Travis County, Texas, in 1 week period, refused 142 detainer requests. We ended up with people being put on the street convicted of assault, domestic violence, DUI, child sex, indecent exposure. Why do we want these people in our country? They should be out of the country, and local police should be allowed to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Dave, greatly appreciate it. Dave Ray, he is from the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR. Look him up online. Dave, thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Something good to eat. Make my head a little high. Make the whole day complete. We'll lay around the shanty, mama. Put a good buzz on.
We are in the spirit of things.
I'll pass it to me, baby. I'll pass it to me.
You know, apparently, you know, smoking cigarettes is bad. Weed? Good. So we've learned from the government over the last years. 420, it's weed day, marijuana day, whatever. So if you wonder, people are acting a little goofy, you know, whatever. You know, back when I grew up, it was the hash bash in Ann Arbor. That's all you ever heard about, right? And then they basically decriminalized marijuana on the campus there of Ann Arbor, and that was one of the first places I was aware of. And since that time, of course, it's gone. I don't know if it's mainstream marijuana. I don't know if it's mainstream, but it certainly is. I mean, you drive through places in Lansing and so forth, you see dispensaries all over the place, you know, and I see that all over the country now.
Yeah, I was really surprised, actually, when I first moved to Michigan, which is about 6 years ago now, and driving through Lansing and looking, going, this is strange.
Green cross, green cross, green cross, you know, one after another. It certainly has, I mean, and then you've got places like the state of Colorado that have made it full-on legal.
Legal,
you know, people
yeah.
go there. You talk to law enforcement, though, they're not too impressed because the number of incidents, accidents, problems, children getting their hands on marijuana edibles, you know, it's not all rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, all those things that you had just mentioned have increased dramatically. And yeah, I mean, for me, it would make sense to just be like alcohol. You know, if you're under the age of 21, you can't have access to it. And you know, yeah, if you accidentally kid accidentally eats a brownie, well, they're going to end up in the hospital. And
you're going to end up in court.
Yeah, exactly.
As you should. I mean, come on. If you don't mind your, you know, if your kid stayed home and got liquored up, parent, you hear that all the time.
They have, they infuse THC in everything these days. Lollipops and
Baked
goods and all this kind of thing.
We have little kids around our house, right?
Well, yeah,
you know, I mean, good Lord, a kid gets a lollipop. The next thing you know, he's in.
It
the
could
next
be
level.
Detrimental to them, and it's really scary.
I saw this. Don't mean to chuckle about it, but it was funny. I saw this story. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's fun. This woman said she was going for a big job interview, and she was super nervous and couldn't eat, and then decided before she left the house that she just grabbed the brownie that's on the counter there and, and go to the job interview. It was her roommate's brownie, and she said 20 minutes into the interview, she was unable to speak further because she was mangled.
Oh, no.
There goes the job. Really? It was my roommate's.
Oh, how horrible.
Did not work out very well for her. At any rate, most people that I talk to in law enforcement, not fans of that whole deal.
No.
Of,
and nor is our new AG.
No, Sessions. Jeff Sessions, not a big fan of the whole deal. It makes you wonder what will happen to marijuana here in Michigan and elsewhere as the move continues. Of course, the dispensaries have come under a lot of pressure. A lot of people have had trouble. We've heard of people going to jail because you're allowed to grow X number of plants. And, you know, if you can grow, I think it's 12 that you can legally grow per, if you're a provider, yeah, then you have your patients, and I'm not well-versed in all of it, but I'll just say you get your 12, you're a caregiver, and you're giving care to people. You get 12 plants per person, but if you have, you know, three or four people and you have 500 plants, you're going to go to jail.
Yeah. Well, I think that the federal laws and the state laws are not aligned, and so how do you manage that?
Well, that's why most banks won't handle the money is because if Jeff Sessions, for example, as the attorney general, says, you know, we're going to enforce the laws and we're going to come have a crackdown around the country, then if banks are holding money for a dispensary, And the money's taken from the bank. It's not taken from the depositor, and that's a problem. So a lot of these dispensaries then have a lot of cash, because it's a cash-operated business, because normal banks won't work with them.
Yeah, I mean, I personally have mixed feelings on the legality of it. I mean, I have friends that have helped immensely going through cancer and things like that.
I think everybody in this day and age knows people that partake, either recreationally or out of need. I have a good friend who's a doctor, a very close friend, whose mother died from a very painful cancer here a few years ago. He said he's not anybody that would ever prescribe marijuana as a medicine. However, he said if his mother had asked for it, he would have gone and found it because of the incredible pain he saw her in, which almost seems like a contradiction for where his positions are.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a contradiction that many of us face, and that, you know, with it being legal, is it too available for young people, and is that having a negative effect on the development of their mind and things like that? So, for me, I think if it helps you medically, that's great. I certainly don't want my children or other children around it.
No, absolutely not. No, because you don't want an accident like, you know, your kid shows up in fourth hour, you know, and your kid ate the brownie. Bad deal, right?
Exactly.
A listener says, what I don't get is either it's medicine and it shouldn't be taxed, or it's recreation and it should be taxed. As is, it's apparently medicine and being taxed. Of course, medicine, true medicine, is not taxed. So, what is it? It's a hybrid. And that's the point. And I believe that most people smoke marijuana recreationally. We do know that for some illnesses, for some maladies, epilepsy for one, marijuana has been shown clinically to have a lot of value in some of those areas to help cancer patients with their nausea and so forth. It's shown a lot of good effects. But overall, let's be honest. Most people use it as a recreational drug. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Paragraph.
Yeah. Toke it up, dude.
What did you say?
Toke it up, dude.
Yeah. And she heard about it in college once, apparently. Yeah. So it is. At any rate, it is that day. We appreciate your support, as always. You can find out more by going to stevegruber.com, where you can hear the program live by clicking the Listen Live button. That's how clever we are here. Mm-hmm. There are also podcasts available. If you hear an interview or a conversation you want to go back and share with your friends or listen to yourselves, you can do that. Again, it's all at stevegruber.com. You can follow us on Facebook. It is The Steve Gruber Show. Follow us on Twitter. Ivy's fingers are going a mile a minute every day when we're on the program, keeping up to speed on social media and so on and so forth. We'll have a couple of final thoughts here on the program in just a moment. Sit tight. We'll be right back. Somehow Neil Young seemed appropriate today as well. You stand your side, I'll stand my. Hey, listen. All right, so tomorrow's Free for All Friday. And we're going to have Ivy back. You know, you should be here more often. You know, you contribute a lot here, and you leave me hanging here most of the time all by myself. You know?
Well, sometimes I get an invitation. Sometimes I don't.
Oh, is that what you're going to tell the folks? That sometimes you're not allowed? What are you? You're not allowed? Well, you can tell them that. That's interesting. Okay.
No.
Tomorrow is Free for All Friday. And you suggested that we should talk about what defines a victim. If everybody wants to be a victim, of course, not you and I, and most listeners of this program, not victims, but let's have the most, ridiculous victim stories, or what defines a victim. Let's have some sort of, some sort of measure, right? Is that what you're saying? Let's have some sort of measure of what a victim is. Let's talk about victimology here on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good. And also, you know, when you, the word victim, I think people really forget about, what is the true meaning of a word? You know, and so victim, what does that exactly mean?
And in this day and age, you're a victim of somebody says something you don't like or you don't feel good about or, you know, whatever it is. Apparently, it's a very low threshold, it seems to me.
Yeah. For me, I went through a lot of crazy things growing up, and I could definitely consider myself to be a victim, but I've never felt that way.
Well, you'd be we'd know if you, based on your story, maybe we'll share some of that tomorrow. It's up to you. But you went through a lot more than the average individual would go through. And certainly your victimhood would be accepted in many circles today. But you've chosen to never look at yourself as a victim. I've never even seen you even approach that kind of thinking.
No. And so, I think that my experiences had quite the opposite effect.
I would say that's entirely true from my experience. I know you a little bit. I know you a little bit. And working on getting to know you better, which I appreciate. It's 57 after. Listen, that's going to wrap it up for today. Free for All Friday tomorrow. We're going to talk about victims. What is and what isn't a victim? Because everybody seems to want to jump on that bandwagon. All right. So have a great day, my friends. Remember, always be bold. Keep the faith. And always, always listen to The Steve Gruber Show. We'll talk tomorrow.